always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
President Biden could stop this stuff on a dime. All he would have to do is pick up the phone and call the president of Columbia University quietly and say, "Madam President, how you doing? Listen, I don't have a lot of time and I know you're busy. You've got 14 days to get control of your campus or you're not getting any more federal money." Now, she will pounce on that like a ninja. And President Biden is not going to do that. President Biden is scared to death to alienate the Hamas wing of the Democratic Party.
There you go. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL, your number one station in the region for live and local conservative talk. Tim Jones back in the action in the saddle today with Chris Arp and producer Joey V. The Hamas wing of the Democratic Party, that Senator Kennedy's got away with words, and he's always usually brutally honest as well.
Do you think he has presidential aspirations?
You know, I don't want to call him old, but maybe if he was a younger man, I don't know that he's interested. I don't know. He would be awesome.
Joe Biden's 83 and Donald Trump's 78.
He should run. what do we always love in presidents? We love communicators, yeah. Right? That's why Barack Obama was popular. Mm-hmm. That's why Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, right? People,
that's true.
Americans.
George Bush, who stumbled all over his words and everything.
He was kind of endearing, you know. Right place at the right time with 9/11 and got reelected. But generally, the most successful president, it's JFK. They're the ones that can put a couple sentences together, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of times, what else do they have? They do it with humor, yeah. Right? A lot of those guys were like, Ronald Reagan was famous for being self-deprecating, yep. You know? Same as Kennedy. John Kennedy, yeah. Right there, the senator. He's a wordsmith, and he's also funny, and he doesn't take himself too seriously.
You gotta do something with that voice, though.
Yeah.
And Biden, gotta be quiet.
Like Ross Perot.
Yeah, there's just something about that voice, though. He's gotta work on that. Well, there's some bass in there somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, to turn down the treble. Yeah. Well, Joey could probably help him with that, right?
Exactly. Hey, give him some bass.
Speaking of bass, I accidentally stumbled across an incredible musical performance on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I was on Eastern Time, mm-hmm. So I was an hour ahead, so it was pretty late by the time.
7:30?
No, it was 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
We got back from this reception, mm-hmm. You know, at this event we were at, and I walked in, I turned on, the TV had been on NBC mm-hmm. because I was watching the Kentucky Derby pregame, yeah. Which is like 12 hours of pregame on Saturday. And so the TV was still on NBC in the hotel room. And when I flipped it on, Chris, they have this on Saturday nights, they have this little they have this little Saturday Night Live like appetizer before the local news. And then from a few weeks ago. Do you know Chris Stapleton, the country music star?
Yes. Yeah, I like him. Yeah,
deep voice, right?
Mm-hmm. And I haven't listened to him recently. He just came out with an album, I guess, last year. Mm-hmm. And what I saw was a performance on Saturday Night Live from 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
White Horse. Okay. Holy cow! Mm. This song is powerful. Have you heard this yet? Are you a country music fan at all, Joey?
Chris Stapleton is that guy that any dad who says, you know, that new country is rap crap, they still like Chris Stapleton.
That's correct, because right. He sounds like old country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jeff Allen hates the new bro country.
I do, too.
Florida Georgia Line and all that.
I'm old school.
But Chris Stapleton looks and sounds like an old school country music star.
Didn't he sing on the Super Bowl or something? What was some?
Yes, he sang the Star Spangled
Banner. Last year?
It was.
I can't even keep years together. It
was a year ago.
Yeah. That's when I was like, man, that white dude can sing.
He's got some soul, right?
Yeah, he does.
He's got that deep. There it is.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Yeah. That's right. Chris just makes you want to get out and ride a horse, doesn't it?
It does. Had that wind going through my hair. Never mind.
And what I also found out. I was like, who is the lovely lady standing next to him on the stage? Yeah. And she was doing the vocals, the backup, and she had the old tambourine out.
Oh, okay.
It's his wife.
Oh, okay.
His wife is part of the band.
Keep it in
and
the family.
I thought that was really cool. And so I learned a lot. I did my Chris Stapleton. Anyway, I don't know why I just thought of that with the White Horse and all that, but anyway, it was a pretty powerful song.
He's got a powerful voice.
Lots of toxic masculinity.
Yes.
You know, I love it. Yeah, very much indeed. Well, Chris, you know who doesn't have this toxic masculinity is these Hamas protesters. And you know, you brought up something. I'm so glad
they got estrogen.
They do, and more of it every day.
No offense to my lady friends.
I'm so glad that I just remembered something you mentioned before we went on the air in the first hour. You talked about the fact that, you know, these kids, these poor kids who are in senior year of college, were also punished 4 years ago in their senior year of high school because of COVID.
Yeah.
So you've got an entire generation who must be, can you imagine, Chris, if you had your senior year of high school and now your senior, so senior year of high school because of the government clampdowns on COVID. And now you've got these lunatics running the asylum and now you can't have a college graduation either. No wonder kids are so screwed up these days. They can't live a normal life.
And let's look at the overall big picture, Tim. What administration, what party shut down, the high schools and so these kids couldn't go to graduation? What party?
That would be the Democrats.
What party is involved with Palestinians and Israel and shutting down college campuses so that these people can't have graduation ceremonies? Who's behind that?
That would be the Democrats.
Exactly. But of course, these folks will never see it. The Democrats are the one that are screwing up your life moments.
Yeah. And if before you want to call us, whatever you want to call us, I don't know. What do they say? Oh, yeah. Before you want to call us Islamophobes or we hate the Palestinians.
Flat earthers.
And we want everybody in Gaza to die. Before you go there, I'm going to talk about that in today's speaker stump speech from an article from Politico, which, as Chris and I know, and I know many in our audience know, is no right-wing publication. Politico definitely center-to-center left. They're gonna give the Dems always the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. So this was in some amazing reporting from Politico. We'll get to in a second. Chris, at 5:25, we're going to speak to our good friend Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor at Red State, redstate.com. She's host of the More to the Point commentary, which she releases several editions of that weekly here on Newstalk STL, and she fills in frequently for all of us when we might be hither and yon. So we're going to talk to Susie about all the Red State headlines in just a moment.
And I've got the Red State site up right now, Tim, and Red State is popping.
Yeah, it is. They've got a lot of amazing stories on there. So folks, go nowhere. You're going to want to get fully up to speed on everything you need to know as you head into Monday evening. All right. Without further ado, therefore, let's get to today's speaker stump speech.
Listen to me.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the speaker stump speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
Now, I want everybody to realize, too, there's real people behind this. There are real Jewish Americans, millions of them, who are absolutely terrified about what's going on in our country. We've got several of them listening to us right now. Big shout out to listener Tanya. Chris, I was with a fellow by the name of Paul Teller over the weekend.
Oh, I know. I've never met him, but I know his name. But I'm going to email this.
Yeah. Great dude. He served in the Trump-Biden. Listen to me. The Trump-Pence White House. He was in the Trump-Pence White House. He was in the White House. He was such a great part of like the conservative movement because he was such a welcoming guy. He used to bring in groups all the time. I got to go over there once with Grover Norquist and the gang. Paul is now running a lot of Pence's like post vice presidential operations. Mm-hmm. He helps run a think tank called Advancing America Freedom. And you know, whatever you might think about Mike Pence these days, I know our listeners are all over the board on that. Paul's group is doing great work. They are challenging the left wing lunatics on all this crap going on around the country. They file lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, lots of amicus briefs. They're trying to take down the Chevron doctrine. They're trying to help our kids get protected from DEI and ESG. So that's what Paul's doing right now. I was with Paul. He was at the thing I was at over the weekend, and he's a Jewish American. And Chris, the first thing I said to him, I walked up to him. I said, he said, hey, I heard about the filibuster in Missouri. It's great work and all that. Mm-hmm. I said, Paul, I want to know, man, how are you doing these days? You okay? And he goes, you know, thanks for asking. He goes, it's kind of tough right now. He goes, I'll be honest. And Paul's got kids, and sure. I think they're in college. I said, how are the kids doing? He said, you know, they're okay. You know, we're trying to just, you know, keep them calm and make sure they're all right. But I just want people to know that there are millions of Paul Tellers and his wife and his kids out there. These are hardworking Jewish Americans who believe in the cause of freedom and liberty. And they're under attack. They're literally under attack by the lunatic left. Well, folks, guess who's funding all of this? Politico. Yes, Politico. Not Fox News. This is not Newsmax. This is not Red State. This is Politico reporting. Pro-Palestinian protesters are backed by a surprising source. Joe Biden's biggest donors. Some of the most outspoken groups against Biden and Israel get funding from foundations. See, that's how they do it these days, folks. They set up this really cute, cozy, cuddly, pink fluffy unicorn sounding 501c3. They give it a really nice sounding name. And then it's unfortunately bar the door because here comes the leftist, socialist, anti-Semitic radicalism. Some of the most outspoken groups against Biden and Israel get funding from foundations attached to some of the biggest names in Democratic circles. Yes, you Democrats, Chris and I know you listen to the show because we see you frequently on Twitter, X, and Facebook trying to poke holes in everything factual that we happen to be saying. President Joe Biden, from the article, has been dogged for months by pro-Palestinian protesters calling him Genocide Joe. But some of the groups behind the demonstrations receive financial backing from philanthropists. I like how Politico uses the word philanthropist, pushing hard for his reelection. The donors include some of the biggest names in Democratic circles: Soros, Rockefeller, Pritzker, our own governor right next door here in the People's Republic of Illinois. Two of the organizers supporting the protests at Columbia University and on other campuses are Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now. Both are supported by, oh, I know this name. You do too, Chris. The Tides Foundation.
Oh, that's a blast from the past.
Which is seeded by Democratic mega donor George Soros and was previously supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It, in turn, supports numerous small nonprofits that work for, quote, social change. Soros, of course, declined to comment, but a spokesperson with the Open Society Foundation, of which Soros is the founder and chairman, said in a statement it has funded a broad spectrum of U.S. groups that advocated for the rights of Palestinians and for peaceful resolution to the conflict in Israel. The article goes on and on and on, noting, okay, here's another one. David Rockefeller Jr. He sits on the board of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. Yes, folks, this is the famous Rockefellers that go back generations. It has given nearly $500,000 to Jewish Voice. Again, the names mean nothing. Listener Tanya, who's Jewish American, said, yes, unfortunately, the Jewish people have plenty of Benedict Arnolds and traitors in their midst. Every group in the history of the world has traitors and turncoats and hypocrites in their midst. George Soros, folks, he may be Jewish by lineage, but he hates the Jewish state of Israel. He's a self-loathing Jewish person. He breeds chaos. He breeds destruction. He is a change agent for the worst parts of humanity. Jewish Voice for Peace, it explicitly describes itself as anti-Zionist, anti-Israel. Over the past 5 years, Rockefeller Brothers has separately given grants to both Tides and the Tide Center. Folks, what does this all mean? This means that there are extremely dangerous radicals, multi-billionaires at the highest levels of the, quote, New World Order and the World Economic Foundation that want to do what? Tear down the beacons of freedom and liberty. Destroy the democratic republics around the world. Why? Because the democratic republics around the world are the ones standing in their way to their caste system of elites and non-elites, of the haves and the have-nots, of the Hunger Games in real life, where a small group of, quote, smart people get to tell the rest of us out here in the districts what to do, what to eat, what to drive, whether we get to travel or not, whether we have to fly in an airplane ever again, how we turn on our lights, or if we're all going to be confined to a future, if we survive, living in stone caves, rubbing sticks together for warmth. Folks, they want to depopulate the planet. They hate the human race. They have this kind of vision that this, we are the world. Now, that's not a good thing to use because that was a nice song. They have this vision, this utopia that will never be realized, this socialist communist future. Every time it's been tried around the globe, which it has been many times in many civilizations, it has always failed. Socialism devolves into communism. Communism eventually breeds oppression and then death. The world's largest slayer of the human race was communism in the 20th century. Look it up. the very folks who are funding all this radicalism on campuses around our country and, dare I say, around the globe, are none other than agent provocateurs of the Democratic Party. And that's the speaker's stump speech for today.
You know, maybe our friend Tanya can address this, but I wonder if one of the reasons why the George Soros and the Pritzker and the Bernie Sanders types can be sell out their people is because they aren't particularly religious. You know, Bernie Sanders has said in interviews, I've heard him say, he says, I am proud of my Jewish heritage, but I am not religious. I'm an atheist. I don't practice Judaism, but I am a Jew. And I wonder if it's the same for Pritzker. I wonder if it's the same for these others, because, you know, with the Jewish people, their religion ties them together. It mm-hmm. makes them a cohesive unit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can go further than that theologically. I think God designed that on purpose. But if you are of the Jewish heritage, but you're not particularly religious and you don't get involved in all of the traditions and the rituals, does that make you not identify as much with your Jewish brothers and sisters because you're not all the way there when it comes to practicing the faith?
I think that's a good point, because it's obviously obvious that Soros's religion is neo-Marxism, right? That's his religion. That's his cult.
Right.
And he is an agent for destruction, for chaos and change, and not change in a good way. I think that's exactly correct. He doesn't have an affinity or a connection to the religious tenets and to the deep ideological faith. His ideology is destruction through Marxist radicalism.
And making a lot of money, too.
Well, he's a currency destroyer.
Yeah.
He's a destroyer of currencies. He's brought down entire countries
yes.
with his currency manipulation. Mm-hmm. He's not a good person, folks. I don't care if he's white, black, brown, Jewish, Catholic, the man in the moon. He's not a good human being, and he's not someone to be admired.
Well, remember, he sold out people during the Holocaust when he was a teenager. Mm-hmm. He was working for the Nazis. Mm-hmm.
He's apparently
working for them.
He's always been a radical provocateur. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, folks, we're going to get to a break because the one and only Susie Moore is standing by to tell us everything that you need to know. And there's lots of it, as Chris pointed out, at redstate.com. We'll digest and dissect all of it when we return here on Monday's edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Keep it right here at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
This is a bite trial. He's a crooked president. Now, it just came out, Columbia just canceled their commencement. That shouldn't happen. And it also came out that the protesters, many of the protesters, are backed by Biden's donors. Okay? Are you listening, Israel? I hope you're listening, Israel. Hope you're getting smart. But they're backed by Biden donors. That's where the money's coming from.
Yeah, we just discussed it on the speaker stump speech today, and let's see what our next guest thinks about all this Biden campus chaos and more.
Oh, Susie Q, baby, I love you. Susie Q.
I'm the boss.
That's
how
right.
Yes, she is the boss indeed. She's the boss of redstate.com, Susie Moore, at Smoozy Q on Twitter. Susie, how you doing? Hope you had a great weekend.
I'm doing pretty well, and I did. I had a very nice weekend, actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Susie, Donald Trump there has a point, along with everybody else, right, who's been calling all of this out. It's really shocking, isn't it? Look, Susie, there have been plenty of presidents, Democrats and Republicans, that have had to deal with civil unrest in this country, and both Democratic and Republican presidents in the past have not hesitated to call out the National Guard, the military, whatever, put down these protests and end them. There's been infamous periods in our nation's history where that's happened. Joe Biden seems to be fine with the campus chaos just raging on, doesn't he?
Well, he seems to be oblivious to it more than anything else. Seems like he's only addressing it when he's forced to and reading off of cue cards that he can't quite read right. So, I mean, I don't think he knows which direction to turn.
Hey, Susie, Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota, went on Face the Nation on Sunday to try to do a little damage control over the Cricket Gate scandal. We'll play you something from it and get your thoughts on it.
Taking responsibility for the change that we've made.
Okay. And for the mistake in the book.
And I've told you that. And I'm, no, it's not. What I've said is that I have
decided. You're not taking responsibility for the mistakes in the book.
I've decided this and. I'm saying that this book is very, very good, and I've met with many world leaders, and that there are world leaders that I've met with that are in this book. There are many that I've met with that are not in this book. Okay. And this is an anecdote that I asked to have removed because I think it's appropriate at this point in time. But I'm not going to talk to you about those personal meetings that I've had with world leaders.
Okay.
I'm just not going to have that conversation because I think it's important.
Susie, as a communications professional, how did the governor of South Dakota do on Face the Nation?
Not great. I didn't think that was very persuasive. It sounded like he was trying to kind of have it both ways. Like, oh, you know, there were mistakes made in terms of some of the information contained in this book that I am hawking, but
it's like, did you meet the guy or not? It was like painful watching it.
Yeah, it was very slippery and politician-y, and I don't think it played well. And I think she's really kind of stepped in it with this past, these recent revelations and how she's handled the blowback from them.
Yeah, Susie, usually when someone like her, a rising star in the political world, Democrat, Republican, whoever, writes a book like this, it's all meant to lift them up. And it's just been one foible after another with the governor, right? You got to wonder who in the world was her publicist, her agent, her editors. I mean, it sounds like
her consultant, Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah, she sounds like she got a lot of bad advice.
Sorry, I had to go there.
Bad advice. We talked about him this weekend, actually. A lot of bad advice about the content of this book, right?
Yeah, I made that point this morning in my, not in my more to the point, but my morning minute. I have not weighed in on the actual heart of the controversy over it for a number of reasons, but set aside whether you're a dog lover, whether you're a farmer, whatever your thoughts may be on the story itself and how she's presented it since, this to me demonstrates really bad political instinct. Mm-hmm. To tell the story in the way she told it, and B, the way she's handling it from a PR standpoint. It does not reflect well on her.
Mm-hmm. One of your Monday morning, no, I'm sorry, your more to the point is Fratty Light. I think I had a six pack of that over the weekend. Can you explain to us what is Fratty Light?
Well, it's a good thing. I guess it's light beer if you had a six pack, Yeah, so, you know, frat boys kind of get a bad rap, and a lot of it is probably well-earned, but the whole thing that sort of sprung up last week after there was the incident at UNC Chapel Hill where protesters yanked the American flag down and tried to replace it with the Palestinian flag, and there was a tussle over that, and the frat boys kind of stepped in and were sort of holding the American flag up and keeping it from touching the ground, and there's kind of an iconic picture that came from that. Some have turned that then into sort of a kind of a meme with the Iwo Jima theme behind it. I'm not going to go that far with it, but I was thinking about frat boys and fratty, and how a year ago we were all discussing the VP of marketing for Bud Light, her characterization of the brand as overly fratty, and what a negative that was. And I kind of was thinking how it's a little bit maybe ironic that here we have frat boys and being fratty, but what they were doing was sort of standing up for our country. And I thought, and this is this, they seem to have their priorities in order, and so cheers to them.
Yeah, Susie, how about a nice good dose of toxic masculinity for once? And you know, I couldn't be more proud of the Tar Heels. It's one of my wife's alma maters. My wife Suzanne received one of her master's degrees at UNC Chapel Hill, so I cheer for them every year in the March Madness tournament, and I'm cheering for them now because, Susie, as much as you and I and Chris and other wise elders like us like to trash the younger generations, Susie, here we have a big chunk of the younger generation who apparently loves the country. And we don't hear that too much, right? Because the media wants us to think that all young people are liberals and leftists and socialists and that Joe Biden's going to have all of them vote. I doubt any of these fellas at UNC Chapel Hill are going to be voting for Joe Biden this year. And how great is it that they stood by Old Glory?
Mm-hmm. Probably not. You're probably right about that. You know, here's the thing. The people that love the country and aren't just interested in agitating or cosplaying and being some meaningful activist are busy completing their degrees and or working. And so you don't see them on the news because they aren't making, you know, a lot of noise, and they, you know, the whole squeaky wheel gets the oil kind of mentality. So you don't see that a lot, and you don't hear that a lot. But I agree, there is a not small portion of our youth that is just fine in terms of having their heads on straight and their priorities, including, you know, pride in their country. And I can attest to that because I have a 22-year-old who's getting ready to graduate from college in 5 days. And she'll be graduating from the ag school at Mizzou. And we were talking about this over the weekend. They said, you know, there haven't been a lot of protests at Mizzou in relation to this issue, but I said, you know, hopefully there won't be any disruption of the graduation. You don't suppose there'll be a disruption of the ag school graduation? She looked at me and she was like, no. Because she's right. I mean, the kids that are going into agricultural related fields, that sort of thing, they're more your kind of, you know, Midwestern values, not necessarily blue collar, but mm-hmm. I mean, just sort of your middle America people who aren't caught up in all of this progressive mumbo jumbo that a lot of their peers are.
Susie, I don't want to beat a dead dog on this. Sorry, can't do that. But here is Christy Noem on Face the Nation. Here's her account of the dog and goat incident. I want to get your thoughts on this.
You put it in a part of a chapter called Bad Day to Be a Goat. And then after you shot the dog, you, quote, realized another unpleasant job needed to be done. Walking back up to the yard, I spotted our billy goat. You said he smelled and would chase kids, so you took him to the gravel pit and shot him twice. It seems like you're celebrating the killing of the animals.
Not at all. This has been a story that my political opponents have tried to use against me for years. It's well known in South Dakota, and it has been to other people. And I want the truth to be out there and to understand that these animals were attacking my children. The extremism of other people and how they have attacked me politically, I understand it. They're doing the same thing to me that they do to Donald Trump every day.
Good idea to compare yourself to Trump.
Well, I think that might be good strategically if she's trying to stay in his good graces and stay in the running as a potential running mate. I think the whole, I'm sure the stories have been out there and just haven't made it national before now. So maybe this including them in the book was a preemptive attempt to kind of head them off at the pass. But it doesn't sound to me like she presented them herself in a light that was really all that great to begin with, and she really just is not doing a strong job of defending it now, and I think that's hurt her politically. We'll know probably in the next 4 or 6 weeks who Donald Trump plans to have as his running mate, and is she still in the running? I suppose she is. Was the story maybe designed to catch his attention? Maybe to show him that she's tough and can do the tough jobs, possibly, but it's not going over well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Annie Oakley meets Silence of the Lambs, you know. Susie, another great article that you put up at that you posted up at redstate.com over the last few days was Let's Talk If We Can About Anti-Semitism and Free Speech. And Susie, one of the topics you touch on is something that I think has been completely lost in the conversation over the last few weeks. Susie, for whatever reason, these young kids, whether they're actually radicalized or they're just going along with their peers, they apparently don't understand is there are limits to the First Amendment. Now, they always seem to want to say that Republicans can't do or say certain things, but they don't seem to realize that limits apply to them as well. Disruptive, violent, genocidal speech is not protected under the First Amendment, is it?
Well,
you don't have the right to violent protest, and there's actually a U.S. code statute against promoting genocide. I guess I should have been more specific.
I was going to say because there's this fine line there, because when someone is just using words in a certain context, while they may be disgusting, vile words, that in and of itself may not be, you know, something that can be clamped down on. So I sound like one of those darn college presidents right now. Huh. It all depends on the context. But no, that's my legalese kicking in. For the most part, right. I mean, you draw the distinction primarily between speech and action. But where speech can actually cross the line and no longer be protected is when it involves, for instance, fraud or fighting words or incitement, those sorts of things. And on top of that, you've got these universities that have these codes of conduct, these speech codes. Those do need to be enforced if they're going to exist at all, mm-hmm. which you can make an argument that they shouldn't, but if they do, they do need to be enforced even-handedly, and that needs to encompass within it and contemplate anti-Semitism. You can't say it's, you can't be bigoted in this direction, but you can in this direction. I mean, that's just not, this doesn't make sense. So I understand where the sentiment's coming from, but the problem is, I think sometimes we get so caught up in the, I guess, our passion. It's very easy to be passionately on the side of Israel and against anti-Semitism and see some of the things that are being said by some of the protesters and feel like they should be stopped. Well, some of the things they're saying, they should be allowed to say, but that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be repercussions. It's just it's a difficult argument to make, and it's one that I think sometimes people kind of they conflate some of the different issues. And then on top of that, you have Congress passing legislation that seems to be sort of a feel-good measure about defining what anti-Semitism is, but my spidey senses are a little unnerved by that, because I don't really like the idea of passing legislation that really gets into like codifying language that is and isn't acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with you there. Yes.
Susan, we learned that the judge in the Trump hush money trial, his daughter is a Democratic political operative. Ward Clark has an article on Red State Today, the title, former Biden DOJ official now prosecuting Trump took thousands from DNC for political consulting. Are these a lot of grounds for appeal for Donald Trump?
More.
So there's a couple different things. The issue with the judge's daughter, that's one of the grounds on which Trump's team has moved for the judge to have to recuse himself. The mm-hmm. judge has declined to recuse himself, and they have appealed that, and that will be part of any appeal from this case. How that will be decided, I don't know. With regard to the DOJ guy, I don't know. I don't know that that's like a legal basis mm-hmm. to challenge the prosecution. You know, you have this job, now you have that job. It certainly carries some weight in the court of public opinion.
What if you did some research and you looked at his political consulting and it was anti-Trump?
But that shouldn't matter. You could be anti-Trump and try a case against him. I mean, okay. You know,
you're the lawyer. You're the legal expert. I don't know.
Lawyers aren't required to be objective. They're the lawyers. They're the advocate. They can be as gung-ho about their client's position as they want.
Yeah, Susie, ultimately, in the big picture of this trial, we're now entering, I think, the third week of it. And whether you read Red State, National Review, Wall Street Journal, you know, anybody on the center right side of the political fence, Susie, I'm seeing a bit of a thread develop here, and it's that they're not proving their case. They're just trying to say Trump bad, Trump pornography, Trump hookers, Trump this, Trump that, and they're not proving the elements of the case. Susie, I don't know how in the world the judge is going to instruct the jury on this when they don't really have any facts to fit the jury instructions. So, and I don't know what you're going to do on jury instructions here when you got a bunch of misdemeanors that are trying to be elevated to a felony. So to Chris's point, I mean, the grounds for appeal seem to be piling up awfully high, don't mm-hmm. they?
Oh, they definitely do. They definitely do. And I will tell you, as somebody, who tried cases over the course of 30 years, my least favorite part of trying cases was jury instructions.
Yeah, they're horrible.
And I cannot imagine what sort of torturous process they're going to have to go through in this one to get them right. And mm-hmm. I have a feeling that there's going to be grounds for appeal coming out of that as well. Yeah, so far they really aren't. I know they've got to kind of build their case. It's all going to end up pretty much hinging on Michael Cohen's testimony at the end, which is ironic since he's a serial liar. But, what they've done basically with the witnesses thus far is kick up a bunch of dust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether that translates into 12 jurors saying, yeah, they've proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he knowingly, falsified the classifications in these business records, and therefore he should be held criminally liable for it. I don't know. I'm not, if I were on the prosecution on this, I don't know how confident I would be in my case.
Yeah, I just hope the lawyers on the jury are true to the oath of their office, because I don't think anything's been proven yet. But we'll see. Susie, thanks for everything. We'll continue to listen to the More to the Point commentaries throughout the week and your appearances on some of our other awesome local programming. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great evening.
You too as well. At SmoozyQ on Twitter, X. Chris, it's 5:45 on a Monday. We survived the day.
We did survive the day. A lot of news today, a lot of great discussion, and looking forward to us wrapping the show up on a possibly lighter note.
Oh, fantastic. Stay tuned for that, and then we will turn you over to Larry Connors USA. We'll have a little teaser as to all the fantastic topics that Larry will discuss with all y'all from 6:05 to 8 p.m., and then the Rob Carter Show from 8:05 to 10. Lots of great local programming straight ahead here on the number one station for live and local conservative talk, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Madam Vice President, Hamas has accepted a ceasefire deal. Hamas has accepted a ceasefire deal. Your reaction?
What are your thoughts on Hamas accepting a ceasefire deal?
5:49 of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. That audio was a little bit hard to hear, but we'll lay it out for you. Kamala was leaving. Excuse me. I want to give her all the respect she's due. The vice president was leaving a restaurant with a couple of bags. Looked like food, of course. Reporters yelled at her about Hamas because Hamas today said they accepted the ceasefire. And in her usually high-looking self and voice, she yelled out, "Shrimp and grits, shrimp and grits. I know that's what you all are asking me, shrimp and grits." So you cannot tell me, Kamala, don't be token up, man. You cannot tell me. Joey, we're going to go a little Hollywood here the next couple of segments. RFK Jr., of course, is running for president. Kevin Spacey, who I loved in House of Cards, just a fantastic actor. Everything that he is in is very good. I think he's won Academy Award, hasn't he? He should have. He's a very, very good actor.
You got to be careful. You really got to get to the point that he's now blackballed from Hollywood.
I know, freak show.
Joey's like, get to the point. Get to the point.
Joey's
the
boy like, touching, he's not a good guy.
Here's the point. Here's the point.
Okay.
And I guess I'm asking you, how much will this matter? Kevin Spacey has voiced his support for RFK Jr. He's kind of on.
Does he want that support?
Exactly. And Joey, you know, you're our Hollywood guy. Kevin Spacey, you know, he hasn't been charged. He's been charged, but he hasn't been found guilty of anything. Can Kevin Spacey make a difference for RFK Jr., do you think?
No, he's been banned from Hollywood. He did win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for The Usual Suspects and then Best Actor for American Beauty, but he's I don't think that gold's going to buy him any goodwill with Americans anymore.
He is a very, very good actor. He really is. And I was disappointed to find out that he had kind of a sordid personal life when he was kind of a pedophile and abusing young boys. But other than that, his acting is phenomenal.
His role in Seven holds up, though. Anything he does terrible, it still makes him a great serial killer in Seven.
What did you think, Joey, of the movie Midnight in the Garden of the Sun, Good and Evil, Saturn, or whatever?
Midnight,
I don't know.
Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
That was the first movie I ever saw him in. What'd you think of that?
Senator Kennedy got his accent from that, I think.
Probably did.
I think there was a murder in New Orleans.
Hell, murder. What'd you think of that movie?
That was really good, actually. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember trying to remember that it wasn't the Shakespeare play. What was that one?
Midsummer's Night Dream.
I kept confusing it with Midsummer's Night's Dream, so I didn't watch it, and then I realized, oh, it's a totally different movie. It's just a murder mystery.
It was kind of had a little supernatural aspect to it, if I remember to the end. Wasn't he dead?
Why are you trying to give away the movie?
I am giving away the movie. A 30-year-old movie I'm giving
that
you
was
away.
That was in the place where Forrest
Late
Gump.
80? Oh,
Forrest
South Gump. Carolina.
No, no. Wasn't it? No, where Forrest Gump sat on the bench.
I know he was from Alabama. Bowling Green or
where
something.
Where the heck was Greenbow. That?
I thought that was in the...
Was that South Carolina? What was the town, though?
Savannah.
And Savannah, Georgia.
Only reason I know that, because last year, a couple of years ago, Becky and I flew to Savannah to do some work for ACV, and Becky had to go to the park where that was filmed in this movie. She, you know, my wife walks 2 miles a day, and she wanted to do her 2 mile walk in that park. So that's the only reason why I know that. Joy, we've talked about this before about AI. I've seen stories where AI is going to take over the movie business. You're not going to need directors. You're not going to need all the special effects people that you have. That AI can do it, you know, for these folks and eliminate a lot of jobs and all that stuff. You've kind of said, yeah, maybe not yet. It's kind of far off. It's got a while. It may be the future. Well, Axios has a story that says the future may be here quicker than we thought. It says generative AI has hit Hollywood, but you have to look hard to see it. Film and TV makers are winging it, further eroding the line between reality and fiction. Media companies and content creators keep getting caught not disclosing their use of generative AI. Here's some examples. Netflix's recently released true crime documentary, What Jennifer Did, included images that appear to have been created or altered with generative AI. Fans of HBO's True Detective noticed posters in the background of one scene that showed telltale signs of AI. The directors of the horror film Late Night with the Devil had to go on the defensive to explain their use of AI for 3 still images in the movie. And finally, documentary fans argue that AI-generated images introduce falsity into the historical record. Fans of fictional dramas say the AI art steals jobs from artists, which ruins their enjoyment of the films. Joy, you are the Tim Jones and Chris Arf Show resident film critic. Give us your thoughts on this, sir.
Yeah, it does steal away jobs, and that's what the strikes were about. That's why our movies got delayed for a year sometimes. That's why Dune 2 got pushed back. People were fighting back to keep their jobs. Yeah, I could see it as a tool.
But does it bother you watching? Would it bother you watching a complete 100% AI-generated movie with the stars of the day, but it's all fake?
Yeah, of course. I want to see new ideas, and AI usually is going from ideas from the past, so I want to see new stuff. Mm-hmm. Something I love that
I've
seen.
Well, tell me this, Joy, but what if it's a new idea, and it's a new movie and everything, but you're just using AI to create the movie, but it's a new plot the whole nine?
I assume that it wouldn't be a new plot, that's all. You know, even humor is really tough for AI, so there's no way it's going to come up with jokes that are current, you know. I just don't see it. I mean, obviously, you could trick me. I welcome seeing a good movie if you're willing to trick me.
Well, because right now they're relying on, well, AI, well, thankfully, it's not sentient yet.
Yeah.
You know, Terminator. It's relying on the past, right, Joey? It's relying on things already created and done, whereas human beings still have the opportunity to create newness in the future.
But it's able to do that in the sense because AI learns by getting all of this new information on thing. It's basically, I mean, it's kind of scary. I was thinking about this over the weekend. AI is learning. I mean, it has its basic knowledge base, but people are continually creating new content or new creating new things, and AI sucks that up and it goes into their memory, into their brain. So it can almost always be kind of fresh because there's so much information to take in. It's an effect learning.
Do people not understand that we're creating the Matrix and Skynet
seriously
all at once?
I mean, think about that.
Yes.
All this information they can get from the internet and stuff that's created every single day, AI is sucking that up and is learning.
Can we turn it off? Can we just turn it off?
It's too late.
I know. You could tell if it's an AI movie if they give it 7 thumbs up because there's always too many fingers.
Joe, you've never answered that question, though. Why does AI, or to my satisfaction, let me put it that way.
Look at Kristen Welker over here.
Why does...
Yes, I will certify the results of your selection.
Why does AI... Please, somebody tell me. Put it on the stream or something. Why does AI have such a problem with fingers? Why do people have 7 and 8 fingers on one hand, 12 toes? What? I don't... Why? Can create perfect images for other things, but it's just fingers. It has a really hard time.
I've seen a prop for Criminals where you put an extra finger on your finger, and then you can rob anything you want. And then when they show the jury the security cam footage, like, oh, that guy's got 7 fingers. This is AI. This is fake.
You're still not going to answer that for me, right?
I don't know.
Hey, Susie Moore is up next. She's subbing for Larry Connors USA from 6 to 8. She's the deputy manager of Red State. You just heard her, so you know it's going to be a great show, and it's going to be very knowledgeable. Listen to Susie Moore next on the Larry Connors USA 6 to 8. You've been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number 1 for live and local conservative talk. Drive safe. Have a great evening.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.